We are with Dr. John Hope Franklin at the New Schools at Carver. Bill Russell?
I would like to take advantage of your historical insights and understanding and knowledge. My understanding is that the Brown versus the Board of Education effectively reversed Plessy versus Ferguson.
Which was a Supreme Court decision which made affirmed the legality of segregation.
Back in the
1896.
Right. I'm saying right to him. yes, sir. the reason I bring that up is it seems in a democracy we tend to take for granted and all of its benefits, and yet, of course, it's always a constant struggle. Justice is a constant struggle. And I think of Brown versus the Board because that was the reversal of a Supreme Court decision, which means Supreme Court decisions can be reversed.
Yes.
I also
and
wonder...
The notion is that Supreme Court decisions, therefore, can be wrong.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly. I wonder that in a context, thinking in terms of eternal vigilance. I find myself wondering if today's Supreme Court would make the same ruling...
That Brown
made... certainly, I mean, that was a majority, I mean, that was a unanimous decision.
Under the Earl Warren Court.
Absolutely unambiguous decision. But I found myself worrying about that. And of course, courts are influenced not just by the law, they're influenced by the political environment. But I find myself wondering if, in fact, this Supreme Court would make that same decision, which I find a source of serious concern.
That you should even question that.
But I should question that. I also find in that context, and again, this really is a historical question, if Congress would pass something comparable to the 64 Act and the 65 Act.
Both the Voting Rights Act and the Public Accommodations
Act. And I ask all of that in the context of the relationship between our government, the various parts of the government, and our responsibility as citizens.
Well, I don't think there's any question but that the present discussion about, say, who should be on the court and who should not be on the court is in a context similar to what the problems you've raised. If they're debating, as they are, on what kind of people we should have on the United States Supreme Court today, they're also debating whether or not the court can be shaped in such a way that it will reverse decisions that have been made in the past. It could have to do with the Voting Rights Act. It could have to do with the Civil Rights Act. It could have to do with Brown against the Board of Education, which desegregated our schools. It could have to do with the reversal of Roe against Wade, which had to do with the protection of a woman's right to choose abortion. The fair fact that we are debating the qualities and qualifications of people who are going on the United States Supreme Court in 2005 suggests that we are willing to select people to the court, or approve of people to the court, who will reverse the court's opinion that it's handed down previously. And it certainly means that almost anything is up for grabs if the court's personality, if the court's personnel changes. And I think that's the fundamental root of the debate going on today. We want to change the court, some want to change the court, others want to keep it as it is. We don't know what can happen.
These are not abstractions. No. Everything that we have talked about touches every single one of us every day that we are on the planet. And it is, for all that it affects each and every one of us in how we live and what our opportunities are and what can and is not acceptable, it also affects the rest of the world because America touches the rest of the world in so many ways. So these are not... This isn't academic, forgive my saying. This is bringing the academy directly into the present moment in ways that touch everything, isn't it? Isn't this why it's so important to understand this
everything
stuff?
And everybody, you see. It's very important. There's no one in this room or anyone else who can say, well, let them do what they please. It's not going to bother me. It will bother us. It'll bother each and every person in this country as to what the court will do or what the President of the United States will do about the court.
One of the things I found so encouraging about your own telling of your story in Mirror to America is that you never sat back and let things happen. There's no reason that 14-year-olds can't be writing letters to the president saying, I am 14, you're talking about my future and my country. There's no reason that people in their 90s cannot be voicing their opinions to their congresspeople. This still is a country in which the people are sovereign, and we must express and work toward the future that you say could be brighter.
If we are not active in pressing for our case, whatever it is that we want, we will no longer be sovereign. This country will no longer be composed of independent people. They'll be led around by the nose or whatever it is that they can be led around by. And other people, a small number of people, will be making the decisions.
So we're defaulting back to an aristocracy.
That's right, or worse.
Or a monarchy.
Or a kleptocracy.
Yes.
Or a dictatorship. And it's important to always say, yes. You never know the outcome of any of these things. There was a time, this is not American history, but this is world history, and you've been all over the world, when we didn't know who was going to win the Second World War. We didn't know whether the fascists were going to run the world.
Yes.
We don't know today what the outcome will be of our decisions, which again impels us to be paying attention and being involved as citizens.
Yes, we are supposed to be spreading democracy throughout the world today, but I think we ought to remember that we have some faults in our democratic ship of state. I'll just mention one or two of them. We elected a president of the United States 5 years ago, or 100 years ago, or 200 years ago. We elected a president of the United States undemocratically. Our election of the president of the United States is an undemocratic election.
Even if he hadn't been appointed.
Yes. For our Constitution provides that you and you and you will not vote for the president in the election in November of any year. You will be voting for someone who will then in turn vote for the president. You're voting for an electoral college that will sit down in December or January after your elections and will decide on who the president is. Now that's very undemocratic.
And they don't have to decide what the popular vote is.
They don't have to decide what the popular vote is at all.
And don't.
and we somehow have got the notion that when we vote in November, we're voting for president. We're not. We're not voting for president. We're voting for electors who will, in their own good time and judgment, elect the president of the United States.
Well, let me, in that context, again, the history of this, that's how Reconstruction ended.
Yes.
Can you tell that story? Because I'm not sure everybody knows it.
That deal that ended Reconstruction.
The Tillman that didn't get elected president.
No. Yes. Well, there are several times when the president didn't get elected.
Including in the present.
1800 comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When we counted the population, the black population, that couldn't vote, but we counted them. As eligible to qualify people that could vote, so that in 3/5 of a man, that's all we were in 1800 or 1796 or 1792 or 4, that's all we were. 3/5 of a person were counted as a vote. That means 3/5 of a black person. So that
A black man, yes.
I'm sorry. Thank you. So that the only way Thomas Jefferson won the election in 1800 was that the slave states could count their slaves as eligible to be counted as voters, 3/5 of them anyway. And that gave Thomas Jefferson a greater number of electoral votes than John Adams had, and so he won. And in the election of 1876 is what we're talking about at the end of Reconstruction, a similar thing happened. That is, you had people who were voted, who voted, who were not eligible to vote. You had people whose vote was counted, whose vote should not have been counted. And you got a compromise, and out of the compromise came the election or the selection of a person for president who was not really elected president. So the compromise provided for an undemocratic result of an election. So we don't have the kind of democracy that we should be proud of or should be spreading around the world. It just isn't the same. And yet we are touting ourselves as the leader of the democratic world, when as a matter of fact, we are something less than the leader of the democratic world.
We have things to learn from John Hope Franklin as well as from our own experience. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Franklin. Please be with us when we return.